It's a very good place for them to go to start learning how to raise their children. Someone once commented to my wife that it was a pity that God didn't give us a user's manual for our kids to tell us how to raise them. And her response was, well, yes, as a matter of fact, He did. It's called the Bible. The Bible gives us a lot of very good, practical instruction on how to raise children. And it even provides us with case studies or examples of people who were successful or people who were failures in raising their children. And in each of those cases, it usually gives us the information that we need to know why they failed or succeeded. So the Bible is a very good manual for raising your children, the best that there is. And the book of Proverbs is a very good place to start looking at what the Bible has to say about raising children. Let's start by looking at Proverbs chapter 30, beginning in verse 11. Proverbs 30, beginning in verse 11, says, "There is a generation that curseth their father and doth not bless their mother. There is a generation that appear in their own eyes and yet is not washed from their filthiness. There is a generation, oh, how lofty are their eyes, and their eyelids are lifted up. There is a generation whose teeth are as swords and their jaw teeth as knives, to devour the poor from off the earth and the needy from among men. The horse leech hath two daughters crying, Give, give. There are three things that are never satisfied. Yea, four things say not, It is enough. The grave and the barren womb, the earth that is not filled with water, and the fire that saith not, It is enough. The eye that mocketh his father and despiseth to obey his mother, the ravens of the valley shall pick it out, and the young eagles shall eat it." So we find here a very frightening picture given to us of a generation. And in just a few moments, we'll look at this passage in more detail at what it's really telling us about this generation. But for now, suffice it to say that it's describing a very evil generation. One of the things that we know about children is that they can bring a great deal of joy to a family. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 6. It says, "Children's children are crown of old men, and the glory of children are their fathers." And that's a very lovely picture that's painted here of the grandparents of a child of children, and the glory, the joy that those grandchildren can bring into their lives, and the glory that children and parents find in each other when the home is what it should be. A very beautiful picture painted there. Let's look also at chapter 29 and verse 17. It says, "Correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul." So a parent or a father that brings up his son correctly, that child is going to bring him rest and comfort, not only while that child is still in the home, but even later when that child moves out of the home and that father can see that child prospering and living a godly life. There's that rest and comfort that a parent gets from seeing that in their child. And we have a number of examples in the Bible of children who were brought up that way and who prospered and brought joy to their parents. For instance, Samuel, he only lived with his parents a very short time, but in that time that he spent with his parents, they were able to impress upon him enough of a lesson in godly living that he grew up to be the man that he was. We also have the example in the New Testament of Timothy. But as we've seen in Proverbs chapter 30, children can also bring sorrow. and shame to a home. Let's look at several passages that deal with that, starting in Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 5. Here we find a son that brings shame. It says, "He that gathereth in summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in harvest is a son that causeth shame." So here's a child that's grown up to be lazy, and he brings shame on the family because he hasn't done what he needs to do to provide for himself and for his family. And let's look at Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 20. And here just a general proverb. It says, "A wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish man despiseth his mother." Can you imagine the sorrow that would bring a mother to know that her son grew up to despise her, to have open contempt for her? And I will say that I have seen children that have exhibited exactly that kind of behavior toward their parents. Sometimes at a surprisingly early age, where they would show disrespect and despite toward the parents. And then let's look at chapter 17 and verse 2. It says, "A wise servant shall have rule over a son that causeth shame, and shall have part of the inheritance among the brethren." And here we have a description of a situation where the son's behavior was so shameful and so offensive to the parent that there's a servant in that household that basically takes the place of that child. And then in verse 21 of chapter 17, it said, "He that begetteth a fool doeth it to his sorrow, and the father of a fool hath no joy." So a person who brings up a child who is foolish as he grows older, who's not the wise man that's described here in the book of Proverbs, that child is going to bring him sorrow, and he's not going to have joy in his old age as he watches his child behaving in an ungodly way. Let's look at chapter 23 and verse 24. Okay, I've actually got chapter 23 and verse 24 really out of sequence here. That should go up in the section about children bringing joy to the family, because it says, "The father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he that begetteth a wise child shall have joy in him. Thy father and thy mother shall be glad, and she that bare thee shall rejoice." So that really belongs back up in the previous section, but it talks about the joy that a wise child can bring his parents. And then let's look at chapter 29 and verse 17. And again, it looks like I've, for some reason, these last two verses, I've gotten them on the wrong part of my outline here. But it says, "Correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight to thy soul." That's one that we've talked about already. So children can bring sorrow to home. Can you think of some children who brought sorrow to their parents because they were not brought up properly, because they were not trained to be wise children and did not grow up to be wise adults? Eli's sons are an excellent example. And if you go back to 1 Samuel, it tells you in a fair amount of detail there why they grew up to be the way that they were, and the failures in Eli's life as a father in raising those children. Going even further back, can you think of a child that brought sorrow to his parents because of the way he behaved when he grew up? All right, Esau. Jacob and Esau both were involved in some things that they shouldn't have been in their behavior. Think all the way back to Cain. Cain and Abel. Cain murdering his brother. And then moving forward a little bit to the life of David and his son Absalom. And there are some things that were told about the life of David and the home life that Absalom had and the circumstances that he grew up in that give us clues as to why he turned out the way that he did. Now let's go back to Proverbs chapter 30 and look at verses 11 through 17 in a little bit more detail. And look at the characteristics of this generation and what's being said about them here. First of all, we find in verse 11 that they are disrespectful. It says that they curse their father and they don't bless their mother. And remember in chapter 31, when we were talking about the godly woman, it talked about how her children blessed her and praised her. And we have a situation here where the children don't do that. They're disrespectful. They're not grateful to their parents for what their parents have done for them. That can be seen in the actions of the scribes and Pharisees during the life of Christ in Matthew chapter 15. What were they doing that showed their lack of respect for their parents? Pardon? Okay, and I was thinking in Matthew chapter 15 when Christ was talking about the Pharisees and what they had done. That's right. They had found what they thought was a loophole and had come up with this tradition where they could avoid taking care of their parents in their old age. Let's look at Romans chapter 1 in verse 30. We find the description of the depths of depravity that the Gentiles had fallen into when they had given up their knowledge of God. In verse 30 of Romans chapter 1, it says that they were backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things. And then what's the last thing on the list? Disobedient to parents. You know, that's something that children need to think about. Look at all the things that are said here. You've got unrighteousness, going back to verse 29. Fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whispers. And going back even further than that, sexual immorality, including homosexuality. And right there, with all of the rest of those, what we would generally consider to be very heinous sins, is being disobedient to parents. Something that thought in a young person's mind and in the mind of their parents. That's right. Mm-hmm. We see, and we're not going to read the passage, but in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 9, the Apostle Paul warns Timothy that this being disobedient and disrespectful to parents would be a sign of perilous times that were to come. And in Exodus chapter 21 and verse 17, what penalty could be invoked on a child who was disobedient and disrespectful to his parents? He could be stoned. It's not a trivial thing. That's correct. Stoned to death. The death penalty was invoked. In verse 12, we find that they are pure in their own eyes. That is, they, by their own standard of judgment, and looking no further than their own selves, they are right or pure in their own eyes. In Judges chapter 17, in verse 6, and also in really, probably more so in 21 and verse 17. Turn back there for just a moment. Not 17, verse 20, chapter 21 and verse 25 of Judges. It says, in those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And this is at the end of the section that gives a description of some of the most vile behavior that you find on the part of the children of Israel. You have the occasion where the Levite's concubine was abused and killed by the man who really wanted to take the Levite out and abuse and kill him. So you had the Sodomites there in the city. You had the people of the city who wanted to defend those men. You had the children of Israel who gathered together an army and very nearly brought Benjamin to extinction. You had the scheming that went on to help the men of Benjamin get bribes or women, basically by kidnapping. So you have a very wicked period of time in the history of the Israelite nation. And it's because men were doing what was right in their own eyes. They were pure in their own eyes. This is something that's warned against in a lot of places in the Bible and several places here in the book of Proverbs. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 7. It says, "Be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil." So in order to show the respect and the fear for God that we're to have and to keep ourselves away from evil, we've got to avoid being wise in our own eyes. Let's look at chapter 12 and verse 15. Here's talking about the fool and his way of life. It says, "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hearkeneth unto counsel is wise." So the fool, as he blunders through life, the things that he does are right in his own eyes. He thinks he's doing right as he flounders through life. And let's look at chapter 21 and verse 2. It says, "Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord pondereth the heart." Let's look at chapter 14 and verse 12. And here we have one of the problems with living a life that's right in our own eyes. It said, "There's a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death." So when we seek to do things that are right in our own eyes, when we choose our own path, make our own laws, live according to our own standard of morality, that's a way that leads to death. And We could come up with examples where that could lead to physical death, but certainly for everybody, that way of life is going to lead to spiritual death. We find in verse 13 of chapter 30 that this generation, this evil generation, is arrogant. And that goes hand in hand with the problem of being pure in their own eyes. And really this gets to the root of why they appear in their own eyes. It's because they're arrogant. He says, "How lofty are their eyes, and their eyelids are lifted up." Really, arrogance, in many ways, is a sign of ignorance. Let's look again at Romans chapter 1. This time we'll look at verse 22. It says, "Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools." And this is speaking of the people after they willingly forgot God, when they put God out of their knowledge, out of their minds. When we take God out of our lives and we seek after our own wisdom, we become fools. And the Bible tells us the fool has said in his heart that there is no God. We can look also at 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Where the Apostle Paul talks to the Corinthians about the wisdom of this world and its relationship with God and His Word. He talks about in verse 18 that the preaching of the gospel to the people of the world is foolishness. In verse 19, he says, "For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent." Continuing in verse 20, it says, "Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this world? Hath not God made foolish the wisdom of this world?" Then it talks about how because of worldly wisdom and their own confidence in their own wisdom that men reject God and reject the preaching of the gospel. So arrogance leads to destruction. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 18. Fairly well-known verse. We hear portions of it quoted from time to time, but it says, "Pride goeth before destruction, and an haughty spirit before a fall." And, of course, that is because pride keeps a person from listening to advice, from listening to wisdom, and from listening to God and His teachings. But that is a characteristic of a generation of children that are not brought up properly. Now let's look at verses 14 through 16 of chapter 30. It says, "There is a generation whose teeth are as swords, and their jaw teeth as knives, to devour the poor from off the earth, and the needy from among men. The horse leech hath two daughters crying, Give, give. There are three things that are never satisfied, yea, four things. Say not, it is enough. The grave and the barren womb, the earth that is not filled with water, and the fire that saith not, it is enough." So, another characteristic of this generation is greed and covetousness. Verse 14 talks about their teeth being as swords and their jaw teeth as knives, and they're devouring the poor. They have no mercy. Their covetousness and their greed is such that they don't care what they do or who they do it to in order to get what they want. And what do you see in small children sometimes, and children as they grow older, that give you a clue that they're going to grow into this kind of adult? What kind of child grows up into this kind of adult who wants what they want and they don't care what they have to do and they don't care about the consequences to other people? Mine. A spoiled child. A child that's brought up without discipline, who thinks that the world revolves around them. And I think that's part of what's being talked about in verse 15 with the horse leech, and on in verse 16 with the grave and the barren womb and the earth, the dry earth and the fire. These are things that never are satisfied, just like a person who's brought up spoiled, who thinks that the world revolves around them, that the world owes them something. They're never satisfied. They're always grasping for more, and they don't care how they get it. And they don't care about the consequences of their actions to others. Their world is greed and covetousness and self-indulgence and self-satisfaction. And that type of thing starts very early in a child's life. And you can see that seed planted in a child as he sometimes even in the grocery store or as you're out shopping. You see children that are spoiled, and this is where they're headed. I believe you had a comment.
And
That's all right. That's fine. As we look through this description of this generation, we get down to verse 17. What is the end of that child that grows up as part of a generation like the one that's described? Destruction. Now again, we can come up with examples where type of lifestyle that's described here can lead to physical harm, to physical destruction, but really ultimately it's spiritual destruction that we need to be concerned with, because that is the true tragedy, is the loss of the soul. Now for the next part of the lesson, we're going to look at the things that we can find in the book of Proverbs that will help avoid allowing a generation like this to grow up. Lessons that a parent can use. And we've talked about a lot of it already in chapters 1 through 9, for instance. A number of things that are said there that a parent can use in teaching a child. But let's look at some other things as well. One of the first things that are needed in raising a child is discipline. Now, we talk about discipline most of the time in terms of applying discipline to the child. But the most fundamental principle of discipline is for the disciplinarian to be disciplined. In order for us to correct a child, we must be a disciplined individual. We must discipline ourselves, and that for a number of reasons. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 29, beginning in verse 15. Actually, let's look at chapter 23 first. Chapter 23, beginning in verse 13. It says, "Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beat him with a rod, he shall not die. If thou beat him with a rod and shall thou shalt beat him with the rod and shalt deliver his soul from hell." Now, if we're talking about the disciplinarian being disciplined, what do these passages have to do with me as a parent being disciplined?
Understand what the meaning has reference to.
All right. All right. And controlling yourself. Is it easy, or should it be easy, let me say, for a parent to beat a child? And then by beat I mean spank or whip or otherwise apply appropriate discipline to the child. Should it be easy for me to inflict pain upon my child? Yeah. It should be a difficult thing to do. But what does it take in order for a person to make themselves do something that's difficult? It takes discipline. The disciplinarian has to be disciplined himself or herself. That's right. Discipline is teaching. And we generally think about teaching in terms of corporal punishment, but really any form of guidance, whether that guidance includes punishment or teaching in another form, the whole goal, the whole purpose of all of that is to teach the child a lesson. And there are a number of different ways that can be done. But that's the goal of physical discipline or corporal punishment. That's right. Discipline should always be explained. In fact, that's one of the key points that I have here in the lesson. Discipline should be explained. If you punish a child for doing something, they don't know why you did it. All you've done is inflict pain on them. And there are a number of principles that go along with that. For instance, the punishment needs to follow the infraction closely, if possible. But it certainly needs to be explained to the extent that the child is capable of understanding. It's correction. Not. That's right. Yeah. Not to vent your frustrations or to vent your anger. Well, yes, a punishment needs to be appropriate to the situation, and there are going to be times when severe punishment may be called for, but hopefully in a proper home that would be very rare. Let's look at chapter 29 in verses 15 and 17. I think we've talked about these verses somewhat already. It says, "The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame." In verse 17, "Correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest, and he shall give the light unto thy soul." A home where the children are disciplined properly is going to be a happy home. I work in a situation where I'm in a cubicle, so I hear a lot of conversations sometimes that I would prefer not to hear. And I hear a lot of talk from people who have children in their homes that are not disciplined, sometimes very, very small children in their single digits, who are virtually uncontrollable. And these people are miserable. And it's all because they don't discipline their children. Yes, sir? That's right. That's right. That's right. You can't wait until a child is a teenager to start disciplining them, to work with them. No. It's something that has to start as soon as they're capable of understanding anything, really. Discipline is something that should not be considered optional. It's something that's commanded of parents. Let's look at chapter 22 and verse 6. Chapter 22 and verse 6 is a direct statement. And I don't believe it's a suggestion. I don't believe it's a matter of opinion. It's a direct statement. "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." And that goes back to the comment that was made earlier, that you don't wait until a child is old to start trying to discipline that child. You don't wait until he's set in his ways. You start at a very early age. And this is a command that tells us that it's not optional. It's not something we can take or leave. Let's look at Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4. I think this is a very important passage in regards to disciplining children, because it helps us to define some of the terms and really kind of coalesces some of the comments that we've already made about discipline. It says, "And you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." The word nurture there comes from a Greek word meaning tutorage or education or training. Means by implication, disciplinary correction, chastening, chastisement, instruction, or to nurture a child. So nurturing a child here carries with it really a whole laundry list of ideas. It has to do with education and training and discipline. It also has to do with that emotional nurture that we're to give to a child. But it really puts the focus on the idea of teaching the child. The word admonition means to call attention to, and by implication, a mild rebuke or warning. So again, the idea of correction. Somebody's done something wrong. You take them aside and you explain to them, that's not the way things are done. That's the wrong way. Here's the right way. So I think a very important passage and one that's very key for parents to understand. Discipline is a sign of parental love. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 4. Verse 24. It said, "He that spareth the rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes." As we've already said, it takes effort and discipline on the part of a parent to apply discipline to a child. It's not something that's easy. So that it's a sign of love. In Hebrews chapter 12, verses 8 through 9, talking about God chastening us, it points out that discipline and chastening on the part of a father is proof that he loves that child. And that the implication is that if a person does not apply discipline to a child, that they're like an illegitimate son to them. It's almost like they wish they could disown them. There's not the love there that there should be. Chapter 13 and verse 24 talks about the promptness that should go with discipline. It should be prompt. It must start early. We talked already about chapter 22 and verse 6. And it must be appropriate, going back to Ephesians 6 and verse 4. The discipline must be appropriate to the child's age, to the behavior that they're engaged in, and so forth. And it must be motivated by love. We're just about to run out of time. I've got a whole section here I wish I had time to cover. Has to do with what we should be teaching young children. Would encourage you to go to Proverbs chapter 23. If we don't have time to cover the material, and I don't believe we're going to have nearly enough time to cover everything that I'd like to say. But in Proverbs chapter 23, make sure I'm in the right place. Okay, for some reason I've got a misprint. I think it's time to stop. I'm sorry. I've got to check my notes. I've got references here to several verses, and apparently I wrote down the wrong chapter. I'm sorry. We'll stop here, and I've been.